Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation In the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the beyond nicotine experience with its beyond tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT, beyond tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TriTAT.com.
Broadcasting live from the Raiders practice facility at the Intermountain Healthcare Performance Center, this is the premier destination for an inside look into the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy, presented by Tequila Embajador.
You know, Lincoln, you mentioned in the last segment, talking about Zay Jones, sometimes the selflessness that you have to show as a professional athlete, just to play whatever role you're being asked to do it, and to do it professionally, and you know, with no qualms. And I was thinking when you were talking about that, about Clee Farrell. I don't know if you noticed on Thursday, but he was pretty big much hit on every. What's that?
Was that the one he had a big hit where he got down into punt coverage? Was that the game? I saw he made a little smack.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think he was on every special teams unit out there on Thursday. There was one, I think he was actually the guy that he committed a penalty which took points off the board for the Cowboys, and then mm-hmm. they decided to go for two. Mm-hmm. If you remember correctly, remember they kicked the extra point, but there was a penalty on the Raiders. It was on Clee, I believe. But anyway, long story short, here's a guy that was the fourth pick overall a couple of years ago. Is now a backup, a reserve, and you know, doesn't get a whole lot of playing time necessarily. That might change with Carl Nassib potentially missing Sunday's game. We'll see about that with his knee injury. But it hasn't, and I know Clee can be kind of a sore spot with Raider Nation and Raider fans. He was the fourth pick overall. That's not his fault. I mean, he didn't have any control over that. Has it panned out the way a team would hope a fourth pick pans out? No, absolutely not. Has he been regulated to basically special teams play in now his third year? Yep, we saw that on Thursday. But I do like that he's handling it professionally. Lincoln, there's something to be said about that.
There really is. And I honestly, I get a feeling because I experienced it to a degree. And in my experience, I was the number nine draft overall, pick overall, and number nine in the first round. And going to Atlanta, it just wasn't a conducive situation. It wasn't a conducive to my strengths and my strong points, the run and shoot. So other than my first year at guard, playing guard my first year starting, I didn't play a lot the next 2 years. And I say that to say this. It put me at a crossroad at the end of my 3 years. That was the start of the new CBA. I was a restricted free agent, which meant that I had to get permission from the team if I wanted to look elsewhere, and the team was going to have to give up compensation to get me. But when not, you know, I felt that the guy who was playing in front of me wasn't as good as I was, and I wanted to play. So I had to take my talents elsewhere. And that's how I became a Raider. But I'm only saying that to say this. I like Clee Farrell. I think he has potential. I don't know if he has enough potential in this defense because I don't think they're using him the right way. That's just me. I'm not Rod Marinelli. I'm not in the defensive line room. That's just me. I think he could be more productive if he moved inside. But there might come a point because when you have with the new rules in place, when you talk about first rounders, you have that fifth year option that they're going to probably end up losing him. He'll probably end up going somewhere else. And if that's the case, I wish him nothing but best success because I think he's a nice guy. I think everybody deserves an opportunity to play. And like we always said when we were in a league, there are 31 other teams that you might get a chance to play for in this someday.
Yeah, without question. And Clee Farrell, looking at his snap counts against the Dallas Cowboys, he played 17 snaps on defense out of a total of 74. So you do the math. But then he played 15 snaps of a possible 23 snaps on special teams. So he was definitely getting time on special teams, and he made a big tackle, like you said. I believe it was kickoff return. I don't remember.
I thought it was punt coverage when he just went down and laid a smack on a guy, and I had to do a double take because I looked and said 99. Is that somebody different? That's a defensive end who's doing that.
Right, exactly. He's showing some speed. I mean, you know, that's pretty good effort right there. And certainly. I did ask Coach Bisaccia today about that, you know, about – you know, I don't want to use the word humbling because you're still in the NFL, but, you know, it's an adjustment for Clee Ferrell. He came in with high expectations, and, you know, usually Lincoln in that third year is when, you know, you really start putting, you start pointing yourself in the right direction for that second contract. You're established now. You know, you're the impact player that the team hoped you'd be and that you would hope to be. Well, it hasn't gone that way for Clee Ferrell. And to your point, as far as the fifth year option, where we sit today, that seems far fetched at this point. I don't think he's going to get, you know, offered the fifth year option. And that's not all that unusual. If you go, and I've had to do this exercise before, where you go reassess 5 years worth of drafts, and I'm not just talking about the Raiders, I'm talking about the entire NFL. I think people would be shocked how many first round picks don't get that fifth year option picked up, and I'm talking about top five picks in the NFL. And also, to your point, a guy like Dante Fowler, if you remember from the Jacksonville Jaguars, he didn't get his fifth year option picked up. He ends up getting traded during his fourth year to the Los Angeles Rams, you know, and did well, helped the Rams get to the Super Bowl upon getting to the Rams. And then he earned himself a nice little payday with the Atlanta Falcons. And none of that seemed even remotely possible in Jacksonville. They didn't pick it up. It wasn't working for him. There was a system, you know, might have been a system kind of like you were talking about. But guess what? He gets another opportunity somewhere else and does well. The defensive tackle from the Chicago Bears, that's with the Leonard Floyd.
Yeah.
That's with the Rams right now. Mm-hmm. Remember, it didn't work out for him in Chicago either. He goes to Los Angeles in a better system, and then he plays himself into a nice little payday. So just because it's not working out here for Clee Ferrell right now doesn't mean he's a bad football player, the Raiders are a bad team. Sometimes it's just not working out. And like you said, scheme plays a big part of it as well.
It does. Scheme plays a really big part of it, and as well as just the overall adjustment to the National Football League. Look, I've seen many guys in college football play like Tarzan, and when they get to the league, they play like Jane. And it's just they're not ready to make the transition. It's not as easy as people think it is. If it was, you would have the league being replaced every year with the amount of guys coming out of college. But experience has something to pay into it. Learning curve has something to pay into it. Scheme has something to pay into it. More importantly, you know, to be a part of a system that's more conducive to your strengths rather than your shortfalls has a really big part of it. And then overall, your adjustment as a pro, because what most young guys need to learn on this level is that now your mind and your body becomes your greatest investment. And it's not going to be up to anybody else but yourself to take care of that. And you look at a guy like Max Crosby, what he did, not only getting himself clean in the way he did, but more importantly, the way he changed his life to the impact that he's playing. Look how long he's lasted now compared to like last year and even a rookie year when it was a little bit of a downside in the latter part of the year. But you look at the way the level he's playing now, and you look at some of the other notable athletes that are out there in the National Football League. A lot of people make the comment about LeBron James and Tom Brady investing $1 million into their body every year. Well, they got it like that so they can. I'm not saying that you have to go through that level, but to understand that your body and your mind are your greatest investment, that is one of the biggest things, one of the biggest keys to being a pro on this level and making a career out of it.
Well, it's interesting you should mention that because Unique Ngakoue came out to talk to us today, and he was talking about what he did with his body during the offseason. And if you remember, I don't think you were with us at that point, Lincoln, but he wasn't a part of OTAs. He did participate in the mandatory mini camp, but all throughout OTAs, Unique Ngakoue, the big Raiders, you know, free agent signing, was nowhere to be found in OTAs. And basically, he had told the Raiders, it sounds like anyway, he had told the Raiders, "Hey, I've got my own thing going. I'm going to be fine, but I'm doing my own thing in terms of, you know, working out and his plan that he had for himself and his trainer during the offseason. And the Raiders were cool. That's fine. You know, do your thing. You know, just be here when it's mandatory, which he was. And he showed up, and Lincoln, I remember literally the first day of OTAs when he was there, and he was working the blocking dummy and putting some moves on it. And it was just like he was being shot out of a cannon. That's how fast he felt, coming out of his stance and just exploding into every rep that he had, whether it was a live rep, you know, against another player or working the bags, whatever it was. But in talking to him today, and he kind of walked us through a little bit of what he was doing, he really dialed it up in terms of the eating, the nutrition, what he was focused on from the smallest muscles in his stomach and how that related to explosiveness. And he took the whole thing to a new level. And it reflects what you're talking about, the investment that you sometimes have to make at this level. You've already gotten here. The key now is staying here and taking it to another level. And in his mind, you know, he wants to be on that Mount Rushmore of pass rushers. Will he ever get to that point? Who knows? Who's to say? But if you're nobly pursuing that, whatever your ceiling is, you're going to get there because you're putting everything into it. And it might not mean that he's going to go to the Hall of Fame, but wherever his ceiling is, he's going to get there just through sheer care and commitment and hard work. And it means something at this level.
You know, and it's a good story. Thanks for sharing. Yeah, what tickles me about sort of the evolution, as I think back to history, the evolution of the off-season workout and off-season training, and to know why that was created in the first place. It was created partly for fat guys like me to keep us in shape,
right,
and also for knuckleheads who couldn't stay out of trouble. True. And it was a way for the teams to keep close contact on what their players are doing. Raiders notoriously, because California was so expensive, notoriously had players like me when I played with them initially live in other states. And the moment the season was over, we're gone. And then it was you didn't get them back until mini camps, which were usually the mandatory mini camps were usually around the draft or after the draft. And by that time, it's really hard to get guys in shape. I'll be honest with you. The first couple of years that I was a pro, I used training camp to get myself in shape. We come back and we were wearing sweat tops under our, you know, our plastic tops as we go out there and practice and stuff like that. And that wasn't necessarily good for your health, but that's what we did to get in shape. You know, so then when they created the off-season workout programs, because they were voluntary, many guys didn't want to do them. But when they started adding incentives and contracts for you have to be there, you know, make a rod, they called roster bonus, had other creative language, but was to get guys to stay there to make the most of it. That's how the evolution of the off-season workout program started. Now when you look at it, for these top athletes, this becomes year-round. This becomes, I mean, it's very few breaks in between. These guys are attuning their body in such a way with nutrition. Science has advanced so much from where it was when I played, with nutrition and just overall tissue repairs and stuff like that and management, as well as what you do. And, you know, I've often said, you know, a PX90 workout doesn't make a good football player, but it does help keep a guy in shape to keep your wind under you to make you be able to do well. So there's been a lot of benefits to what these off-season programs done. But most teams will allow you to do your own thing as long as you show up with a workable product, as long as it shows that it pays off, if that makes sense.
Yeah, without a doubt. And they showed confidence in Unique and Ngakoue, and he rewarded it. And I would imagine that that's something that he's going to follow, you know, throughout the rest of his stay with the Raiders. But I'll tell you who used to defy all that, Lincoln. In my days in Los Angeles, covering the Los Angeles Lakers, Shaquille O'Neal. He would literally take the first part of the season. That was his time to get in shape. Like he would, and it, after a while, that's what kind of started bugging Kobe Bryant a little bit, because Kobe Bryant was the complete opposite. Like he showed it up in tip-top shape, and you know, and he was always the guy that was, you know, getting the earful from Phil Jackson, because Phil treated him a little bit differently than Shaq, because they were different. They were wired a little bit differently, and you know, Phil understood that I can't treat Shaq like that, because he'll just, you got to love Shaq, whereas Kobe was, you know, had the backbone to kind of take it. But after a while, Kobe was like, man, why am I getting all the heat? Like, I show up in shape. This guy over here needs the first 30 games to get in shape. But I'll say this. It always worked for Shaq, even though he would get hurt. There'd be some games missed. It was obvious that he wasn't in tip-top shape. But when it came down to when he needed to be in shape, that dude was in shape. So everyone has a different way of doing things, and he certainly had his. But when he was right, Lincoln, I've never seen a guy that big move like Shaquille O'Neal.
Well, I mean, it was a freak if you think about it. When Shaq came in, he was almost like a new school Daryl Dawkins or Moses Malone with the body style, the big, thick body style. Most seven-footers, as you know, are tall stick figures. You know, but you come in with a body. Shaq's weighing over 400 pounds. No one could take those elbows or take, because he was strong, especially in the key. But, you know, you're right. He showed up when it had to happen. But also, you know, to that point, the brilliance of coaching, different strokes for different folks. And it's up to the coaches to figure out what motivates or moves a guy in the right direction. Moves him in the right. Everyone, you can't teach the same way. You know, Passionate Raider was talking about why I get in coaching. Well, I was raised in coaching. I was raised during a time where coaches would cuss at you, throw things at you, grab your helmet, you know, kick you in the behind and stuff like that to get you moving. You can't do that today. You're going to lose your job. So I've always said, told the story that if I was ever in an offensive line room and I had an offensive lineman say, yeah, I get it. I got it, coach. I got it. I would throw a stapler at the back of his head. I would be out of a job. I mean, you know me well enough, Vinny. I don't take any crap. So it's like, you don't know anything. You don't know anything. So, but it's different strokes for different folks, and that's the key to good coaches, being able to realize what it takes to get your guy going.
Yeah, for sure. And Phil Jackson was kind of a master at that, and he sized the situation up. Remember, he came in 3 years into Shaquille and Kobe's relationship, you know, after it didn't work out with Del Harris, and he did his homework, and he understood, look, I got to love Shaq and make it like, you're the guy, you're my guy, you know, and treated him with you know, pillow covers, whereas he made sure to treat Kobe the complete opposite way, understanding that Kobe was mature enough to take that and understand it, you know, and that dynamic worked. But it just, where I think Phil kind of failed a little bit was, it got to a point where Kobe started, resisting that, like, well, hold on a second, you know, like, I've put my time in too. It doesn't have to be that way all the time. And he felt like Shaq was getting a little bit of preferential treatment at that point. And that's kind of where then that feud sort of started. And I always felt like Jerry West had still been around, and by that time he was no longer part of the organization, but Jerry had a way of being able to sit people down, and Pat Riley too, and saying, hey, let's figure this thing out. You know, we'll get there. Let's figure this out. Whereas Phil was like, they'll figure it out. Let them figure it out. They'll figure it out. And, you know, it just, there became a parting of the ways, obviously. And it kind of had to be by that point. But you're right. You as a coach have to, and especially in football, Lincoln, where, you know, you've got at any given time with practice squad players, what, about 70 guys that you're coaching, that you're dealing with? I know it gets broken up, you know, with positional coaches and offense, defense, and all that. But on top of that, you're dealing with guys, and I've talked to coaches, you know, who have expressed this to me. You know, at any given time, you can have somebody from Stanford University or Columbia University or Harvard, and then somebody that went to, you know, East-West Sideways State, you know, and so they're life experiences, sometimes they're just intelligence, their ability to learn might not be on the same, you know, stratosphere right there. So you have to be able to, whatever it is that you're trying to get through to, you know, the really smart guy, you also have to get through to the guy that might not be, or might be learning differently. And that's also a key. How do you learn? Do you learn by me explaining it? Do you learn by me drawing out on the chalkboard? Are you somebody that, you know, gets it when we get on the field, we'll walk it out, you know, on the field. And I think good coaching nowadays is understanding how to get to each player in the room. And it might be a little bit different, and it's on you to figure that out and then relay that message in a way that everybody's going to be able to absorb.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And a lot of times, a lot of things that are lost in transition because the small things that fall through the crack, it affects both coaches and players. I mean, things like, you know, for coaches, clock management, things like that. For players, you know, being able to keep the same type of intensity game in and game out, that's the hardest things to manage when you're in a pro.
What were you like when you were concepts and schemes and assignments and things like that? How did you absorb it better? Were you somebody that got it when you put it up on the grease board, or did it have to be out on the field, or, you know, how did you retain the information best, would you say?
It just had to be logical. It had to be logical from the point of attack, your steps to, you know, whether it's the blocking scheme, you know, you block down, you double team the back. It made sense. I was a visual guy, so you could draw it up on the grease board and I could follow along, but it had to make sense out in the field. I mean, you know, I was doing the Washington Colorado game, and the two outside receivers on one particular play were running a scissors route where they cross. Well, they ran into each other. And they weren't blocked into each other. The two Washington receivers ran into one another.
Oh, boy.
And I was just like, this has got to be a comedy of errors. This is Three Stooges football right here. You don't see that, especially on a Division I collegiate level, let alone a pro level. But when you have that, it's got to be somebody's not paying attention to detail, or it just doesn't make sense to me. So those are the type of things that I would grab a guy's face mask or go kick him in the ass. What the hell are you doing? How do you run into your own receiver, your own teammate running a route? One of you guys couldn't take half of a step to maybe cut under or do, I mean, so things like that. But I was more of a visual guy.
Well, it's funny you should say that because, you know, Aubrey Pleasant, he's a DB's coach mm-hmm. with the Rams. Now he's with the Detroit Lions. But he told me that, you know, it could get frustrating for the other players. Like you said, you're visual. So you put it up on the board. All right, I got the concept. You know, I'm able to absorb it. Let's go out on the field, walk it out. You know, if it makes sense to me, then I'm buying in completely. But there's guys that aren't, you know. And so other guys are just, you have to repeat it to him on the field and kind of walk it out on the field. And what he's told me was that, you know, what you have to be able to also do is there might be five other guys that did get it in the room, and now they feel like their time is being wasted on the field because now you have to show the other guys what to do on the field. And he goes, and that's when I got to look at them and say, hey man, chill out, because you got it there. They didn't. Have the patience and be a professional and let us get through this part where we have to get your teammate to that point as well. So it's kind of a combination. And you can see, I mean, when you're talking about type A personalities who want to move, let's, I heard this, I know this, why are we talking about it again? Well, because your teammate might not. And it's on you as a professional to be able to say, okay, go do your thing and then I'll wait over here and not be troubled. But you can understand and see that that could be an issue that coaches have to deal with as well.
Oh, yeah. Trust me. I've been around guys that you had the spoon feed. I mean, you literally have to say, look, you here. You go here. Fast. Hit him. I mean, I've been around guys like that. I've been around guys where you know, you take off your shoe and you hold it in your hand. And you say, my shoe is probably smarter than you and it doesn't have a brain. Unfortunately, I mean, I've been around players like that. I've been around defensive guys where you just sit there and say, go get ball. Go get ball. Find ball. Go get ball. So, but at the same point, it's just when, you know, you different strokes for different folks. Doesn't mean he's a bad person or they're bad people. You just have to find different ways to get into him.
Right. And I could imagine you being, you know.
Smartass? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I would imagine that you're over there kind of grumbling like, this dude doesn't get, this is the 50th time we've gone over
exactly,
this.
So. Exactly. Exactly. We literally have to draw an arrow in the sand before every play. Go here. Here, you see? That's me. That's you. Go. You go there. Okay?
I love it. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignore and Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM on a Wednesday.
Interact with the show. Text Vinny and Lincoln on the Sam and Ash text line at 69187 or tweet them at Vinny Bonsignore and at LKennedy72. This is In the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignore and Lincoln Kennedy on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Hey guys, I want to talk to you a little bit about my new friends over at Sextros, and they're putting a contemporary spin on an American classic. You know, during Prohibition, the little town of Templeton, Iowa became one of the liquor capitals of the world, and a pioneering mother, driven by the need to feed her family, crafted a farmhouse brew that ended up becoming an iconic piece of American history. Through word of mouth, Lorene Sextro's definitive creation spread from St. Paul to St. Louis and Omaha to Chicago, all the way to Al Capone in Chicago, who referred to it as the gold standard. This recipe has survived decades of copycats and imitations. Meanwhile, Mama Sextro's secret concoction was passed on from generation to generation. And now, nearly 100 years later, her grandson Heath has brought it back to life. And what was once only enjoyed by Big Al and his connected associates is now available to you. I've personally tried it, and it's exceptional. It's fresh, it's clean, and it's the superior spirit for any cocktail. Visit sextros.com, that's S-E-X-T-R-O-S.com, for all their products and recipes and where you can find it locally. So go get connected over at sextros.com, that's S-E-X-T-R-O-S.com. Back out to the Raider Nation listener line, we've got Jordan wants to talk about the Raiders. How you doing, Jordan?
Doing well, Vinny. How about yourself?
Doing good, thanks.
Yeah, long-time listener, first-time caller here, calling from New York, actually, going out to the game this weekend. Don't know what to expect this week, Vinny.
Why? You sound worried. You sound concerned, Jordan.
Well, as you know, we've been in this position before, down the stretch, one thing or another. I mean, this year there's been a lot of things, but, you know, we always fade as we've just as you've talked about before. And we don't play very well at home to begin with.
All right. So, and those are valid concerns. But Lincoln and Lincoln, I don't want to put words in your mouth. And we don't know what we're going to get from the Raiders on Sunday, because it has been one of those kind of years where Lincoln, there's just been inconsistency from the Raiders. Right. You look across the NFL, look at the Rams. They're in a 3-game tailspin. I don't even know who those Rams are right now. And they've got talent, Lincoln, all over the place. But the one common thread, Lincoln, that I can point to in terms of these wins and losses and the slides and the surges, and I'm not just talking about the Raiders, I'm talking about everywhere, it's playing efficient football. And I think this year in particular, the NFL is just, there's so much parity, Lincoln, that if you're not on top of your game, if you're not playing sound football, you're going to be in trouble in a hurry. I don't care what team you are. Whereas if you do, you're giving yourself a great chance to win.
Well, look, the inconsistencies lie obviously in the simplicities, simple things that the Raiders fail to do on a nice basis. I mean, look, they put themselves in a hole with turnovers, miscues, penalties, I mean, you name it, just like every team. And to a lot of the callers and a lot of the Raider Nation, absolutely, it has not been a true definitive home field advantage. But the team has been inconsistent all the time. That's why they're at 500, a little bit over 500 now, 6-5. But all is not lost. It just puts a lot of pressure on these remaining games. And they've got to, they know what it feels like to play penalty and error-free football. They've done it a couple times this year. But you just have to put back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back.
I agree, and I think that the fact that they have done it together is helpful, you know, because they have examples to turn to of, hey, when we did X, Y, and Z, wins came, wins followed. It wasn't Lincoln. There hasn't been, I should say, this huge talent gap. That's demoralizing, and I'm sure you've been in situations going into seasons where obviously the goal was to win every game. The goal was to get to the playoffs. The goal was to go to the Super Bowl. But realistically, you kind of knew in the back of your head, hey, we'll fight. We'll play as hard as we can. We'll do the best that we can. But realistically, we're not one of the better teams in this league, and it's going to be a bit of an uphill climb. I don't know that to be the case. I'm not in your head, Lincoln, but I would imagine that there were seasons where that was the case.
Well, you wouldn't allow yourself to think that way, because the truth of the matter is that you want to feel that you can play with anybody. I mean, Right. Everybody's a pros here. You know what I'm saying? So it's not like you want to sit there and say, we're not going to be able to last, or we don't have a chance at this. But you want to be able to go out there and compete with everybody. And I think the Raiders have everything in place to do that. They just need to put it together.
Yeah, they do. And I felt like they took a step in the right direction again on Thursday. Lincoln, how important was it to get the long ball back into the, get that back into the arsenal?
Oh, extremely important. I mean, without a doubt, because it really defines what this offense is able to do. When you have an accurate quarterback like Derek Carr, when he's on point, those intermediate, those long throws become devastators. And I'm not sure where the Raiders are as far as 20 yards or plus. I think they're pretty high in the NFL. So those are called big plays. Those are called demoralizing the defense, moving the chains, and putting yourself that much closer in scoring territory. I think the Rams have got a number of plays. They lead the league with 50 yards and over big plays. But quick scores, quick hitters, leaves in the back of a defensive coordinator's mind, this team can hit at any time, so we need to be prepared for that. A lot of times it softens up the back end of the defense to allow you to have more things underneath to get more yards and be able to take advantage of bigger plays underneath.
You know, Derek told us an interesting story today, and it was, you know, just sort of the process of getting Deshaun, you know, acclimated and, you know, his play counts up and getting him feeling comfortable and getting Derek feeling comfortable with Deshaun Jackson. But they had walkthroughs last week going into the Dallas Cowboys game, and it was becoming pretty obvious that, you know, Deshaun was getting more and more comfortable, you know, with the playbook. The work that he was doing with Edgar Bennett and Greg Olsen had really contributed to that. And, you know, they had worked on some route concepts that put Deshaun and Derek in a pretty good space in terms of Derek believing and having confidence that, you know, Deshaun was going to be where he needed to be when Derek let loose. And there is a process to that. This isn't peewee football. You know, you have to know and have confidence as a quarterback, just as you do as a wide receiver, that when we get this look, when we get this scheme and we get this coverage on this particular play call, this is where you need to be. This is where I expect the ball to be. It's intricate. It's not easy. And you have to work toward that. But anyway, you know, Derek was telling us a story today where, a couple of times he had pulled, you know, Deshaun aside on this one particular play that they were working on and said, look, if we get this look from the Dallas Cowboys, I need you to run this route and curve right here and be right here on the field, and I'm going to get you the ball right there if we get that look. And sure enough, third play of the game against the Dallas Cowboys, that's the look that they got on that particular play. And, you know, and Derek was saying, you know, I never, when you watch it, it's pretty obvious where I'm going with the ball. I'm like, well, yeah, that is where I'm going with the ball, because I know he's going to be where he needs to be. We had talked about it. We had practiced it. And sure enough, it led to that touchdown. And it just shows where they are now in that whole process. But this is the NFL, Lincoln. You couldn't just rush that. That doesn't just happen overnight. This isn't backyard football. It's the NFL. And all of those things have to be in place before you as a quarterback are comfortable with letting it loose with a guy that you just got to know a week or two before.
A lot of people seem to think or tend to think that things like sacks happen just when the offensive line is porous a back misses a block. More times than not, what I've tried to explain to people is that the chemistry of an offense will determine sacks, or if it's problematic, that the team's not going to have enough time. If the quarterback comes off of his routes too early or feels that he can't, you know, complete it because he's going to be sacked or he's going to be hit and decides to throw a check down, that's not trusting your offense. That's not trusting your offensive line to block. That's not trusting your wide receivers to get open. More importantly, that's not having a great enough chemistry to know where they're going to be when you want to get rid of the football, to know who's likely to be open versus the defenses. So a lot of times, you know, receivers that are smart enough to be able to read defenses, to know where to sit in zones or type of how to defeat man coverage, those are some of quarterback's best friends. But what still has to happen is the offensive line must instill enough trust in that quarterback to know that you can look for that route. You're going to have a couple seconds. So it's not going to be open right away. And so that's where the chemistry tends to develop, but it takes time to develop, to your point.
Yeah, it does. And it does truly start there. I mean, you know, forget about just what, you know, the confidence that Derek, you know, had in Deshaun and all of his other wide receivers to be where they need to be against that particular look for that particular play, which is not always easy to do, to develop that chemistry and that trust. But before even that, or even if you have that in place, you still, like you said, have to believe that the offensive line is going to do its job and give you the necessary time to be able to let that thing play out before, you know, letting loose with the football. And Lincoln, you know, as well as I do, you talk to offensive coordinators, you talk to offensive coaches, you know, they're all creative at this level. They've all got, you know, what it takes to draw up plays and scheme up plays. But too often, for some teams anyway, you know, you get to game week and you know what you have maybe in that offensive line, or better yet, what you don't have in that offensive line. So all of a sudden, all those creative plays, we can't do this, we can't do that, we can't do this. Why? We can't block it, first of all. You know, it doesn't matter if you can't block it. And we saw that with the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl. It didn't matter how creative, you know, Andy Reid was, or Eric Bieniemy, the great offensive coordinator, they could be as creative as anybody that's ever done it. But when those tackles weren't able to block their guys, look what happened. Yep. You know, they became just another team at that point. And, the quarterback became just another quarterback. That's how much that offensive line, you know, plays into it, right?
Yeah, no doubt about it. It really does. And the fact is that a quarterback has to have enough trust and consistency when they call the play to look around and be like, okay, I think we can get this. You know what I mean? Because if you doubt it, you're going to come, excuse me, if you doubt it, you're going to come off of it real quick. And we've seen at times where, you know, Derek looks, oh, Waller's not open right now. Okay, check down. You know, just get rid of the football. And a lot of times that's actually counterproductive to what the offense is trying to do, because now you're forcing the situation where you're putting either a lot of pressure on third down to get the first down, and then you're basically at the subjection of what the defense can do to you, rather than what you can do to that a lot of times if it's third down and long.
Yeah, and, you know, sometimes that's the mistake of the quarterback. Sometimes, you know, you're feeling something that isn't there, or you know, going off past history that you're anticipating that something's going to be there, when in reality maybe the offensive line actually has it covered up, and you let loose too quick because of what you thought might be happening, and that happens as well. But I think when the Raiders are at their best, and I feel like we saw some of that against the Dallas Cowboys, was everyone having confidence that the other guy was going to do their job, their other unit was going to do their job, in order for it to work out successfully. Now, having said that, that dude number 11, Micah Parsons, the Dallas Cowboys.
Freak, ain't he?
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just like, there were times where, I mean, there are times when you play a guy where I don't care what you're going to do to this guy. He's going to wreck it.
He's going to make plays. Yeah. That's exactly right. And then, you know, that's why you hope to draft a high impact player. That's what you're hoping to come by. And, you know, you had it in the sort and such where he made a difference a lot of times in those plays. And it was obvious that Derek was taking notice of where he was, because, you know, they were trying to move him around, whether it was Colton Miller or Brandon Parker, to try to free him up, even on the inside. That's what you do with playmakers, and that's why offenses need to take notice. You don't have to go through, be arrogant and conceited, like, well, our guy can handle. No, you make sure that he's handled before you do anything else, because that's how you build the confidence. Not only, look, there are guys, those guys get paid too. You're going to get beat. You got to learn from it. You know, it's not going to be easy. So it's definitely a lesson to be learned for the offense going forward if they ever see impact players like that again.
Absolutely. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonser and Lincoln Kennedy. Brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM on a Wednesday.
Interact with the show. Text Vinny and Lincoln on the Sam and Ash text line at 69187, or tweet them at Vinny Bonsignor and at LKennedy72. This is In the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy on Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM.
Hey guys, just want to let you know that you can now have Demon Rum shipped directly to you at drinkdemonrum.com. The more you buy, the better the deal. And now, for being a fan, get 10% off your total order. Enter DemonVinny10 in the coupon code. That's DemonVinny10 at drinkdemonrum.com. So, Lincoln, we're looking ahead, taking a look ahead to the Washington football team. It's always interesting to me when you play these out-of-conference teams. You know, a lot of times you don't see these teams for the first time, or, you know, it's like every 4 or every 5 years or so that you're crossing paths. And typically, you, as you know, 4 or 5 years is an eternity in the NFL. So completely different coaching staff from the last time the Raiders faced the Washington football team. In fact, the head coach of the Raiders at the time was Jack Del Rio, who's now the Washington football team's defensive coordinator. So the familiarity and, you know, what they might have done the last time you played them, it's just everything's different. And it's just it's not a team that you normally face. And you've been in this position before where you're playing a team that you may not have seen for years and years and years. There's a little bit of difficulty in that, I would imagine.
Well, there's always because it's the unknown, and there's and especially when you get in a rhythm, like you prepare yourself to take on your own division, and it's not necessarily it's a national standard at times, but it is one that you can rely on because you're going to see the guys the teams that you play in your division the most twice a year. This right. other rotation happens once every 4 years, as you mentioned. So there's a level of unfamiliarity that is kind of begrudging when you think about where you're going to go and how you're going to play. But it's also challenging, and because it shows that you can play, like with the Cowboys last week. You know, the Cowboys were heavily favored. I think it was by a touchdown or more, wasn't it?
Yes.
Something like that. So that's what showed you how disrespectful the odds makers, especially the three-game slide, thought where you are and how much respect they have for the Cowboys. But that's something that you play up to. You play into. From a challenge standpoint. Now, when you come against teams like this, where there's still a level of unfamiliarity and you're not really sure because you haven't played them in quite some time and everything has changed, there's a little bit where you're just kind of play a little bit vanilla in the first couple of series to see how they are before you try to open up things. But it's that unfamiliarity that puts you on your heels.
You know, I remember talking to Jim Mora Jr. when he was the head coach of the UCLA Bruins, and I was talking about you know, he was a defensive coordinator. That's his forte was defense. And, you know, I remember bringing up to him the intent of my story was on a week to week basis. It feels like in college football, you could go from one kind of an offense to another kind of offense, you know, and whereas in the NFL, everything seems pretty standard. And he's like, that's the beauty of it all, though. This is what he was telling me. He's like, and that's what makes it so much, you know, more difficult at the NFL level. Because in college football, he was like, you know, they're doing all this stuff, but they're basically running kind of the same plays out of, you know, maybe giving you different looks or whatever. But it's the same plays at the end of the day. Whereas in the NFL, the looks might all look the same, but they're running 100 more different plays out of those same looks. So it's just at a whole other different level. And the reason I'm bringing this up to you, Lincoln, is at this level in the NFL, and when you're playing a team that might not be as familiar to you as your division opponents, did you ever get into a game where you just got like completely ambushed by something that a team was doing, or was it fairly standard in that regard?
No, it wasn't necessarily ambushed. I think you were surprised that you weren't as efficient and effective with your game plan versus the team that you were going up of. I remember specifically the 2000 Ravens in the AFC Championship. We were the number one rush offense in the National Football League going up against the number one rush defense, but we hadn't played Baltimore prior to that, so we didn't know, you know, what we just thought we could do our stuff. And then when we realized that we were going to have to throw the football to win, that's when Rich Gannon's collarbone was broken by Saragusa. So then we couldn't throw the football anymore. So we were really stumped to try to find any type of offensive cohesiveness or consistency. And that's why we ended up losing the score, but I think it was 16-3 or something like that.
Have you ever gotten like, oh my gosh, they didn't show us this. We didn't even know this was coming. This was not anything.
No, typically teams don't do that. They don't pull out things out of the woodwork to try to. They'll take what other teams that did to you successfully try to. But then by then you've seen it. It was just in a different players. You know what I mean? Usually you don't have guys pull out stuff new because if they don't practice it, if they're not familiar with it, they don't want to get in a position where they get exposed or you know it turns around to bite them in the ass as well.
And even if they are doing something, let's say subtly different, how long does it usually take for you guys to get it together on the sideline. Okay, all right, we got this figured out now.
The coaches, you know, they've got the film, you know, at their disposal. You know what I mean? So you have an opportunity to see that on the sideline. They've got the little, what is it, the little tablets now. We had still shots and Polaroids and stuff like that, but they have those things at your disposal. Like, oh, you see, they're playing this defense here now. This is what we need to, this is how we're going to attack them if they come back and show that look again. So you're kind of up on it. It's not like you're going out each series unprepared.
Yeah, it's the Microsoft Surface is what.
Yeah, that's what they're using now. Yeah, we weren't that technologically advanced back in my day. We were
right,
still using
exactly. But I'm always curious because, you know, the images or the thought process is once teams get into the into the locker room at halftime, you know, it's all these adjustments and all the a big speech and everything like that. But guys that I talk to, it generally really isn't.
Oh, it's not. It's minor adjustments. It really is. You'll go into the locker room and coaches, okay, this is what they're doing. Okay. Or actually the coaches usually go for a meeting first. When you first go in the locker room at halftime, you're getting a drink or getting retaped or whatever. First couple of minutes belongs to the player. Coaches go in, they talk amongst themselves. Then they come out and they say, okay, this is what they're doing. This is how we're going to attack it. This is what we're going to do the second half. That's where the strategies develop.
It's not like high school where coaches were like throwing, you know, erasers at the chalkboard or punching the chalkboard.
No, nothing like that.
You know, it was like, I remember, we still talk about it. Like, you know, my old high school buddies, like, remember when coach said this or did that? Like, it just, once you got to higher levels and stuff, it just, that stuff just stays over there. Although I'm sure you probably saw your fair share of craziness, even in the NFL where,
oh yeah,
arguments and fights and things like that. Were there, I mean, did you ever, where guys would, you know, go nose to nose, maybe over a dispute of something that was going on during a game?
Oh, yeah, it's happened. I mean, guys got into it. You know, you get mad. You know, a defensive player gets mad at offensive players. Man, y'all need to pick it up. We're getting creamed out there. You got to get some first downs. And then, you know, the offensive player jumps up. Hey, man, shut up. Mind your business. We got things going over. You got your own set of problems. Why don't you stop them? I mean, I've had many of times in the locker room that's happened.
That's why it's always good that I, even as a journalist, I feel like that 15-minute cooling off period is very much needed for players.
Yes.
Because I always put myself in their shoes. Like, if somebody stuck a microphone in my face immediately after like a loss or something like that, I don't know what I might say. I get like that. Like, that's how crazy I get. Like, they deserve a little 10, 15 minutes to kind of shake it off before, you know, we're let in there to start, you know, poking around and asking questions and whatnot. But, you know, it is what it is. Even at that point, there could be some shenanigans that happen in the locker room and guys haven't quite taken the loss off their shoulders as easily as someone else. But be that as it may, big game for the Raiders coming up Sunday at Allegiant Stadium, 1:05 kickoff. And we'll be there, obviously, to talk about it. We're going to dive into it a little bit more tomorrow. Lincoln, thanks for everything that you do. We'll check back in with you tomorrow, 4 to 6 p.m. In the huddle. Vinny Monsignor and Lincoln Kennedy brought to you by Tequila and Bajador. DeMond Cotton, thanks to everything that you do. And big thanks to Zay Jones for spending some time with us in the huddle. We'll check you guys out tomorrow. Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation in the huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the beyond nicotine experience with its beyond tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT. Beyond Tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TriTAT.com.